Conversations with Alaskan Gardeners is your gateway to exploring the vibrant world of gardening here in Juneau. Join us as we celebrate the passion and resilience of Juneau's gardening community, sharing insights, tips, and stories from the experts. Here's Margaret Tharp and David Lundrum of Landscape Alaska on KINY.
With Alaskan Gardeners on the air.
It's a call-in show. So if you have questions, call in.
That's 907-586-1800. And you can get on the air, ask us questions. You can talk about landscaping and gardening. You can invite us to see things that are absolutely beautiful in your yard or your neighborhood. You can pose any questions you want. You can talk about getting things shipped out of town, how to manage that. You can talk about gift certificates for your friends.
So in your experience, Dave, what's the most common question that you get as the advice person that you are?
Well, there was probably the most common question that I get is, how do you prevent weeds in your garden?
Yeah.
What kind of ground cover can you put in to prevent them?
You know, we have big weeds here.
We have big weeds here. And one of the things, the response I give is, I always step back a phrase and say, you know, the weeds are essentially pioneer species looking for open spaces. And that's what their genetic design is. They're adapted for going in places where nothing is in competition with them. And if you have open space in your yard, or even whether it's because you haven't done anything yet or because you designed it to be open, That's where these pioneer species are going to take up space.
And the idea of using ground cloth to keep weeds out, it's a superficial application.
Very temporary.
Uh-huh, because they just seed on top of it and grow.
Because you hardly ever do just leave ground cloth open. Most people put either bark or gravel
right,
on top of it.
Right, but it decomposes over time, and weed seed goes in there and starts growing.
Even if you put gravel down, pretty soon it gets dust and duff in it, and then the seeds have a nice place to grow because they are adapted to essentially what the territory is when the glacier goes away.
Right.
So bare earth, gravel, sand, even rocks, that's home to them. And they have those light little floaty seeds that go everywhere. You know that one of the biggest ones is fireweed or willows or dandelions or... or even buttercups, you know.
Buttercups are a big one.
Buttercups are big.
And horsetail.
Even though horsetail doesn't make seeds, it makes...
it runs.
Something.
It's running underground like crazy. So what do you tell them?
I say the first thing is you got to cover every place with something living. And the second thing is whatever you're planting has to be bigger than the competition. So this woman came yesterday and she had a list of ground cover plants and they were... you know, acceptable ground cover plants, and she had an idea that she was going to make a rock garden. And she had done some research and seen some things that you could use in a rock garden, and she was under the impression that a rock garden was a very low labor input landscape. And it's not. What you do when you have a rock garden or a Japanese garden or anything where you're trying to have it be exactly perfect, you know, you have a lot of maintenance just to keep it like that. And a lot of the maintenance is that, pulling weeds out and getting them away. So if, I know that when you did your research, you called it the Eagle Crest method, you know, and really having that as a view, look at Eagle Crest as a super low maintenance landscape.
Because everything's covered. The only place they have weeds is where the gravel parking lot is.
That's right.
That interface between the wild world, which is dense and thick with all kinds of berries, and the rawness of the gravel pad, that's where the weeds are thriving.
And the rawness of the gravel pad is just exactly like where the glaciers go away.
Right, exactly.
You know, or non-frost sensitive fill, which is what they do for housing pads.
So things like ajuga is a low, it grows flat on the ground, and it really isn't very aggressive. And so it's not real successful at choking out horsetail or fireweed or dandelions. right? And so when you're giving people recommendations for what to plant, what are some of your top five that you recommend?
Well, if they want things that are herbaceous, meaning they go away in the wintertime, let me back up a step. So imagine that you're talking about an area alongside your driveway where, remember the snowplow rules. So having shrubbery alongside your driveway is a maintenance nightmare. So you want to have something that's going to go underground in the winter and come back up in the springtime. And in those kind of situations, I recommend something like Roseanne geranium, something that spreads, that gets to be 15 to 18 inches tall, that is really attractive, blooms its little heart out all summer long, and comes back reliably. That's a good choice.
And astilbes.
And astilbes, that's right. Ginger's astilbe ground cover on her property is absolutely stunning. And it is, at, like I said, 15 to 18 inches tall and grows cover to cover, edge to edge, so that you can't see the dirt. Really, that's where it is. If you can't see the ground, then pretty much the weed seeds don't have a chance. They can grow, they can get down there and start, but their light source is shut off, and they're hidden down below. So maybe there are there, but you don't ever
see
them.
They're not thriving.
So I use something like those herbaceous ones.
And what about lingonberry?
Or if I use a woody shrub, lingonberry is a really good choice.
It takes time for it to get very tall because, I mean, over 10 years or so, it'll get to be 15 or 16 inches high.
And that's big enough. But if you want to have something that is a woody subshrub, lingonberry is a great one.
And it's a native here.
And so is the northeast coast native, the
blueberry.
Creeping blueberry. That's
uh-huh.
another good choice. And so is the rhododendrons that lay low on the ground, like Baden-Baden or
Ramapo.
Things that make enough dense foliage that they can grow together and be a carpet.
And you know, the other one, too, well, that's for woody things.
And also, glow girls. It's hard to beat that spirea.
It's a sterile spirea. Thank heaven they started making one.
Right, so it doesn't throw seed, and you can keep it where it wants.
And it's tough.
Oh, really tough, and so pretty.
And you know, in the herbaceous perennials, that Stella d'Oro daylily, you know, people kind of ignore it, but if you have a really nasty place, it grows densely and thickly. You got to take care of it for a few years so it can get big, but nothing, not horsetail, not dandelions, not even grass will come up through it.
Yep, and you know, when you dig it up and look at it, you can see why.
Right.
It's so thick underground, absolutely so thick underground. So Margaret is going to be at the Landscape Alaska today, and I'm going to be at the Maritime Festival with Connor. So you have two chances to come see us.
The nursery is absolutely beautiful. We have just unloaded our last, I hope, 40-foot container, and it's absolutely packed with all kinds of trees and shrubs and flowering rhododendrons and azaleas that came off just huge, incredibly beautiful.
And we were delivering yesterday and setting stuff up, and as people came and they'd walk by the truck as we were unloading and come into the center of the nursery, you could tell they were absolutely thunderstruck.
Yeah.
The rhododendrons are in flower. The azaleas are budded up and great big. The lilacs are really looking beautiful.
And the azaleas are close to 5 feet.
They're 4-footers and 5-footers in the bright orange and bright gold.
Yeah, they're really...
They're lovely.
And, you know, how old do you think those are?
Oh, those are easily 25 years old.
I think so, too.
Yeah. And so our friends that we buy these from have a... nursery in the Willamette Valley.
It's a multi-generational nursery. Their grandfather started it. Is that right?
Their great-great-grandfather started it.
Great-great-grandfather.
And he worked for Baron Rothschild in England at the Exbury Estate. He was one of the nurserymen that was breeding azaleas to make these Exbury hybrid azaleas. So the old Baron wanted to be known as an immortal. And he took the key from Thomas Jefferson, who said, The best way to do service to your country is to introduce a useful plant. And so he bred these azaleas for you. Isn't that great?
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, you think of all the people that have introduced useful plants. Boy, they're my heroes.
Yeah, I understand.
And so he introduced these azaleas. And boy, they are stunning. They're made of about a dozen kinds of azaleas from around the world. And they lose their leaves. And they're fragrant.
And they change color in the fall.
Oh,
they're
as pretty, fire engine red.
Their leaves are as pretty in the fall as their flowers are in the spring.
Yep, and people just stop because the aroma is so powerful with them.
We had them in my neighborhood growing up, and we, in the summertime, our family of four would play hide and seek with the family of six next door. So that's a lot of kids hiding in the bushes at night. You know, we'd be running across the hillsides and hiding in the azaleas and sucking on the nectar out of the flowers.
Isn't that something?
And it was so much fun. And that fragrance is with me always.
It is with me too. And the kind of fluorescent color. How strong it is. You know, it really glows. It's a traffic-stopping kind of a color.
Well, you know, if you like rhododendrons and azaleas, we have a really nice collection right now. We have those Capistrano yellow rhododendrons,
boy,
which are really lovely.
Look at our Facebook posts over the last couple of weeks, because I put up some pictures of the Capistrano yellow rhododendron in flower. It's really a beautiful, beautiful, buttery yellow. Not harsh. And really different than the yellow in the azaleas.
It just looks so romantic. And the name Capistrano, you know, it's like...
makes you so ready.
Yeah, no kidding.
Bula, bula, bula.
Well, this is a call-in show. If you want to share any of your memories or thoughts about plant material, give us a call at...
907-586-1800. See, we bring these trees and shrubs in when it's still too cold to set them out. And we've got a big greenhouse we use to temper them and get them used to the temperature and let them get ready to come out. And in the last couple of days, we've been unloading that big greenhouse. And we've brought Japanese maples and cherries and apples.
How many of those summer blooming lilacs did you bring?
Three
of them?
Japanese tree lilac. That's what you're talking about. Syringa reticulata. I think there are five, and they're all multi-stemmed trees.
Are they all up at the nursery now?
Yes.
Okay, I'll organize them so they're together. I tried to get them together, but I may have
missed
some.
This is an astounding tree. This is a tree that flowers in August. Different than other lilacs. And it gets big. It gets 15, 18 feet.
It's a creamy white.
Yeah. Creamy white and incredibly fragrant. There's some really big ones on Calhoun Avenue in the governor's garden.
Yeah.
Right along the fence there. Boy, when they're in bloom, you can smell them from Mark Choate's house.
Right.
Which is just down the street. Just down the street, but it's 50 yards away.
Uh-huh.
You know, so as we were working there, I could smell them. No, that was a couple of years ago, but it was delightful.
I think that for me, it's always about plant combinations. What can you marry with something else so that the bloom time is extended? So those Capistrano rhododendrons in the creamy yellow, I want to partner them with something that will start blooming about the time they finish and will flower the rest of the summer.
Well, that's a good combination.
And I'm always tempted to use Roseanne because it's a real beautiful sky blue, no muss, no fuss perennial that blooms a long time, takes the rain, takes all the weather. But I was just I'm just thinking in my mind, what else is there? You know, should I put some lilies in, or is there something?
Well, lilies are a hot number here.
And Monarda. Monarda is always nice. That dwarf Monarda that we have is great.
Which is also known as bee balm.
Right.
Or you think of something that the pollinators want to come to, Monarda is right up there. Aren't the bumblebees so beautiful in the rhododendrons right now?
They're almost the size of hummingbirds.
They are huge. And you see them in there. They look so happy. They're buzzing away, vibrating inside the rhododendron flowers.
Uh-huh. Well, remember the kids used to take the paper cups and capture the bees? Not hurt them, but it was their game.
Mm-hmm. The bumblebees don't sting.
They had to do something at the nursery when they were at work, when they were 4 and 5.
Uh-huh. So we have been dealing with Tyler Rental for 30 years.
And so happy.
So happily. And they have such wonderful, wonderful products and wonderful service. I got to say, if you want to rent something, you want to have some kind of a power tool, if you want to have either a mounted tool or you want to buy one, you want to just rent something like a skid steer or even a weed eater or a chainsaw.
Well, they have all
the place to go.
They have all that, the work clothes and the best gloves in town, as far as I'm concerned.
And safety stuff. Mm-hmm. If you want to have your hearing protection, you want to have things to guard your hands, guard your knees, all those things. Tyler's really the place to go. Plus, they're so nice to deal with.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And I have Tyler things in every one of my vehicles. I know I've got tools and safety gear and hard hats. And
well, my little car is a toolbox.
Yours is a toolbox. That's right. And you've got those.
I've got all those
pruning tools,
those skill tools, chainsaws, yeah, and pruners, and all of those.
Well, Tyler, we're so glad you're here, and thank you ever so much. It makes our life so much easier. Another question I get often is about hedges. Things people say, they either want a privacy hedge or somebody has bought the lot next to theirs and cut all the trees down. They're building their home, or they're building their home right adjacent to their home on their property line, and they want to be able to protect themselves from the view. So they're always looking for something that's going to be a quick solution for it. And the classic thing, of course, is the arborvita that we're all familiar with, the one that's called Emerald Green in America and Smargard in Europe.
And we also have Technis.
That's a different one.
Yep.
Right, so that's an alternative. The Smargard is the one that looks like a big dill pickle. Tight, columnar, upright.
Very green.
Very, very green. And Techni is a wilder form.
It's a looser, but it also responds to the snow weight better.
Very differently, that's mm-hmm. right. And it gets big. Gets big and bulky.
It has a little bit of yellow on the tips of the new growth.
If you drive down Riverside Drive and at the corner of Northland, there's a house there on the northern corner, and it has a huge hedge of these Techni arborvitas.
Right.
And you look at that and you think, now that's not like anything else I see. And it looks more like a wild cedar tree.
Well, and if you could, personally, they're a little too big on that lot to my vision, but they're easy to prune and maintain as a hedge, where some things are much more difficult.
Other things that we can suggest for that are the columnar Norway spruces. And that's a tight tree.
They're incredibly, I'm real tempted to talk to Peggy about adding a couple in her hedge that I'm going to be putting in next week, because the new growth on them is blonde. It's incredible.
Well, I think that's because the new growth came while they were in the container.
Oh, you don't think they're going to be like that?
I think that the new growth is normally bright green.
Well, I've just never seen anything like it.
It's
like having a blonde in our nursery, curvaceous and beautiful.
If you're interested in visual stuff right now, come to Landscape Alaska and gaze around. It's so pretty, so very, very pretty right now. And I've taken most of the flowering plants down to the public market, but
we still have some.
And the rhododendrons and the trees and those beautiful red-leaf maples.
Man, yeah, they're really pretty.
They look hot.
Yep.
So if you think about the red leaf maples you see around town, they're big and spreading trees. They have a round top. They grow out as wide as they are tall.
We have some. It's a different kind. We have several kinds of red ones. And one, it's almost purple black. It's so dark.
And it's called a crimson sentry. And it's selected to not be so broadly spreading.
Right.
It's more for a narrow place. It becomes like a big exclamation point.
Mm-hmm. They're all real pretty.
Uh-huh. We have one in our yard that we've moved about 5 or 6 times. Every time we move the nursery, we've moved this tree, dug it up, and carried it with us. I mean, we've had that tree 25 years, 30 years.
Right. They're darling.
Still happy.
Mm-hmm.
Still growing right along. So I know that we've been talking about hydrangeas steadily for the last 3 years since we discovered these new hydrangeas. And I'm so glad to see them in other places now. I'm so glad to see other people started to carry them. And really, when they come into bloom around town, it's like, light bulbs turning on everywhere.
I think that dwarf one could go in one of those big hanging baskets and live there.
Mm-hmm. I think winter a dwarf over. Hydrangea growing in a hanging basket would be great. Good morning, Conversations.
Yeah, good morning. I just have a question. I live at Mountain View Senior Center, acquired, which it's an avocado plant, but I was wondering how big, if you take care of them, which I've been doing. I had it for how big would it grow, or would you have to continue to transplant it?
Well, they get big. Avocados get big.
When I was a young man, I lived in the tropics in a place where avocados grew. And they grow like oak trees. But I don't think you're going to get that in your living room. The biggest one I've seen as anybody's houseplant was probably 6 feet tall. I'm sure they get bigger than that, but that's the biggest one that I've ever seen.
Well, mine is it's probably about 2 feet tall, so I'm sure it won't grow into a tree, but it looks nice. I like plants, so I was just asking.
Sure.
And they like you back, I'm sure.
You know, and it will grow as big as the pot will maintain it, and then you might want to move it into another pot in a couple of years. It'll keep growing.
Oh, okay. Well, we have a big bay room, which is about 12.
I'm sure. I've been in there. It's nice.
Well, thank you for the information, and I'll continue to let it. I can bring it downstairs, but yeah, thank you for the information. I appreciate it.
And you have that nice greenhouse on the back of it, too.
If you ever need any help with it, let us know. We'll come help you.
Surely.
Well, right. Well, I live at Mountain View. It looks beautiful, but it was in the free area I wanted to grow. Thank you for your show. I appreciate that.
Oh, I'm so
very
glad
nice
you listen.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Okay, so.
So when I was growing up, everybody was growing avocados.
I remember. Everybody had avocados.
They had toothpicks in the seed floating over the top of a little bit of water. And
they're probably all still alive.
Yes. Everybody's house had. I grew up in Portland, so avocados were definitely out of zone. But my mother had 3 or 4 of them out in pots on our front porch. It's hilarious.
Yep. Things go in phases, absolutely in phases. And now it's those indoor herb gardens. How many people have indoor herb gardens now?
Well, yeah.
I bet we see people looking for herbs every day. You know, they're there for
the thing,
thyme and rosemary.
Uh-huh. The thing for me, the indoor herb thing, is I'd still have to have it in a greenhouse or outside in some kind of cover. There's too many gnats, soil gnats.
You know what?
I'm sorry.
That's the perfect introduction to my next topic.
Okay.
Because there are beneficial insects that target soil gnats that you can put into the soil. Little tiny mites that go and eat the eggs for the soil gnats.
Oh, we should get some of those. I know that the people who have a lot of houseplants have a horrible time here with gnats.
I sell them most summers. I sell those, but I don't have a great big demand for them. But what I do have a big demand for
is the aphid eaters.
Yes. And they just arrived yesterday. So we have aphid eating bugs.
On a little card that you attach to the plant that will eat your aphids. And not bother you.
And not bother you. So you get a little card that has a hole punched in it, and you hang it on the stem of your plant. And that when the eggs hatch, the larvae crawl out and walk around on your plant eating aphids. And they look for all the world like little alligators with short tails.
But you need a magnifying glass to see them.
Oh, you do. That's right. Like... You can barely see them as they move around. But each card has 5,000 eggs on it. So they're going to start crawling around, you know, and munch. They have 5,000 eggs, but each little bug will...
So how much do these cards cost, Dave?
$6.
$6. Remember when we planted the vine maple at the library, the museum?
I do.
And it was covered, it came to us covered in aphids, and that we wrapped it in plastic and then released like 10,000 ladybugs
inside
that plastic
bag. And it worked.
It did work, but it sure looked god-awful.
I thought it looked great. It looked like science class. Looked like the most fun you could have. So we're coming up close. We've got just a few minutes left of our show. So if somebody's interested in these little bugs...
We have them at the nursery.
We have them at the nursery, and we'll also have them down at the Maritime Festival today. And if you're interested, we can even send them to you in the mail if you live at someplace other than Juneau.
And if you want to get some of the ones that eat the soil gnats, let David know and he'll order those.
Right. And if you have an office building or an office suite that has fungus gnats in it, this will really knock them out. I had an office in a two-story building where most of the rooms had little plants, African violets, Diefenbachias, and even Christmas cactuses. And they all had soil gnats in them. And they all were flying around. And the people living in the offices were always, always distressed about them.
Don't you think, so on another side of that, do you think it's because most people use packaged soil that retains too much water and that's why the gnats come? Or do you think the gnats are just part of indoor plants? I mean, is there an environmental thing that you could help combat
Absolutely.
Them from the beginning with faster draining, drier soil? Because the potting soil is so dense.
Right. And people think they're taking care of their stuff by watering it. When really, most of the things that we have as
you
indoor
wanna,
plants...
You want to dry out in between times.
You want to be drier, a little bit drier. They're not really growing in a swamp. They can grow in a swamp, but they'd rather have air to their roots.
Right.
And so having something that you keep moist but not wet, that's really the key to it for indoor houseplant health.
Right. Well, you know, I inherited all those plants when we bought the house that we're in now, and they're huge. And they're in soil that doesn't retain water, and I water them once a month in my shower. No soil gnats here.
No soil gnats. And
I don't have that fine potting soil.
No, it's coarse.
Mm-hmm.
Barky added to it. That's something else. If you buy a bag of potting soil for growing your plants in, and you look at it, and you can see all the particles are little, you know they're going to pack together. And you know that roots need oxygen. So when they pack together and they're wet, there's no space for the oxygen. So you take the composted bark mulch, and mix it in with that potting soil.
And give it a different particle size.
That makes a world of difference.
You can do the same with gravel, too, but sometimes gravel has weeds.
and also, gravel is pretty solid, where the bark has airspace inside it.
Right. And it's lighter. You don't need a forklift to move your pot around.
So of all the things that we brought in this week, my favorite, hands down, are the cyclamen.
Are we going to be able to order the artichokes?
I ordered them.
Okay, so artichokes...
They'll be here next week.
And they're 4-inch pots?
Yeah, 4-inch pots.
Okay, so artichokes are coming for those people asking for artichokes.
It's amazing how many people came this spring saying, where's the artichokes? We loved them. We ate them. They were great. They didn't live through the winter, but I want them again.
That's great.
So
these
are seed-grown artichokes, so they're quicker. You're going to get a crop the first season. Also, I had several questions about apple pollination this week. Some people had apples in bloom in their yard, and there's not very many apples in bloom yet.
One minute.
Okay, we're ready to go? Okay, so call me up and talk to me about it if you want to know about it. And remember, landscapealaska@gmail.com will get to us. Come see Margaret at the nursery today. You'll have a wonderful time. And she'll walk around with you and show you the most beautiful Japanese maples, the most beautiful azaleas, the most spectacular rhododendrons. So,
until next week. Happy gardening.
This is Mark and David from Landscape Alaska. We're wishing you all happy gardening.
Conversations with Alaskan Gardeners is your gateway to exploring the vibrant world of gardening here in Juneau. Join us as we celebrate the passion and resilience of Juneau's gardening community, sharing insights, tips, and stories from the experts.